But right now, let's lock up the Austin. Wow. The Oregon fuel injection hotline. Because apparently he's taken over my mind with some kind of a Jedi mind meld. Get the local view. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. On, you know what? On Twitter, it's at Austin Meek RG. Austin, help me out here. How you doing?
You know what, Steve? It's about time I had my own hotline around here. I've been doing this show, what, 2 or 3 years now? I think I've earned that privilege.
Obviously you have, and I subconsciously agree with you as I completely lose my mind here. But anyway, glad to have you in any shape or form.
Glad to be here.
So today's article, obviously this despicable Larry Nassar case, an ongoing mess at Michigan State. Happily, Nassar now spends the rest of his life in a cement and metal cage. You mentioned about the jobs that have been lost and how people get fired for far less than failing to protect the innocent. So how important is it beyond, you know, feeling good the monster got vanquished, that we actually take a moment, learn, and like you said, moving forward, actually try to seek solutions?
Well, it is human nature, when confronted with a scandal of this magnitude, to immediately look for the villains. And there's plenty of blame to go around here, starting, of course, with Larry Nassar, who is behind bars now and where he belongs. And then from there you go down to the president at Michigan State, the athletic director, the coaches, who, you know, were not implicated in anything related to Larry Nassar but have had their own issues in terms of sexual assault allegations within their own programs. So it's a whole mess at Michigan State, and everybody right now is trying to figure out who to blame, who should be fired. You know, it's natural you want to see heads roll when you're confronted with allegations of this magnitude. But the point I was making today is, along with that, along with accountability and holding people accountable, we also need to come up with some ideas for how to avoid this in the future. You know, if all we do when scandals like this happen is put the bad guys in jail and fire the people who were somehow complicit or negligent, We're not doing anything to prevent the next one. Maybe it feels better in the moment, but what we really need to do, I think, is address the culture at schools across the country that allows these things to keep happening. Because if it was as simple as just putting people in jail and firing people, then it would have stopped after Penn State,
yeah,
or it would have stopped after Baylor. But it hasn't. It keeps happening.
You know, along with those lines, that timeline with Sandusky sentenced in June of 2012, the three Penn State administrators last June, you mentioned the Baylor scandal, and I was kind of interested in what somebody tweeted at you with, shouldn't Baylor have been the ultimate wake-up call? And you used the word nuance. So the problem there, because you heard folks at Michigan State say, this isn't Penn State, this isn't Baylor, and to me it's like, that's kind of a low bar, no?
Well, yeah, absolutely it is. And I think that's the danger, is that people look at what happened at Baylor and say, wow, that was so egregious there, and the coaches were so tone-deaf that if we're just a little better than that, we'll be okay. But that's not the culture that we want in college sports, I don't think. It's not the culture I want. It's not the culture most people want that I interact with. I think the position that football and basketball coaches have on their campuses, it's not enough just to be better than Art Briles. You know, it's not enough just to be better than Joe Paterno. What I want from a coach on my campus is somebody who recognizes that I'm one of the highest paid employees in the state. I'm one of the most influential people on my campus and in my state, so I have a voice that I can use for good, and to move the conversation forward, and not just to, you know, avoid embarrassing my institution, but actually do something good and bring some positive change. That's where I think we need to get to with coaches in their positions.
Yeah, along those lines, as we continue with Austin Meeker, the Register guard, you noted Tisha Thompson of ESPN's Outside the Lines. I mean, she went for a little stroll with Tom Izzo, and his, "We're cooperating, and I'm not answering other questions." And you were justifiably critical of how Oregon handled that trio accused of rape in 2014. And like you said, earning that money, accepting that role, to play that "we're cooperating and only when pressed" card, that's really frustrating.
Yeah, I think that clip of Tom Izzo, and if you haven't seen it, go watch
it,
because it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, it's hard to watch, but it's revealing, and it shows really everything that I think is wrong with how schools handle this, where you have a coach who is in some ways the public face of the entire university. I'd never heard of the president at Michigan State until about 2 weeks ago, but everybody knows Tom Izzo. He's maybe the most visible face of Michigan State, and to have him up there handling the questions in that way, saying, I just want to talk about basketball. It's all about basketball, and I'm gonna cooperate, and I'm gonna go along with this. But there's no leadership there. There's in no way is he taking any ownership of this issue, and I think that should be an example. That coaches around the country can look at and say, if this happens at my university, this is not what I want to project. I want to send a much different message than what Tom Izzo was sending.
I want to jump over to the news that appeared in, Friday's paper, announced Thursday. After 90 years, the Bakers have sold the Register guard. That struck me as kind of a wow. So from you to your fellow journalists to the folks you associate with in your position, what's kind of the feel over, I guess, within the walls of Guard Publishing?
I'd say wow was a pretty accurate description of my reaction as well. I guess I wasn't shocked because I know how difficult the newspaper industry is right now, especially for an independent family-owned business like the Register Guard had been for so many years. It's sad to me because when I came here 5 years ago, part of the reason I wanted to come here was because the Guard was a family-owned paper, and that set the Guard apart from almost all of its peers in the industry. It's pretty rare to have a paper that was still family-owned, and I think the atmosphere here reflected that. It's been an awesome place to work. I'm grateful to the Baker family for everything they've done, and just my small part of it the last few years. The Guard has been a wonderful place to work and to write about sports. I'm a little apprehensive to see what it's going to be like. The chain that bought the paper also bought my former paper back in Kansas. Things I've heard coming out of there lead me to believe there will be some very difficult changes ahead. But the thing I keep going back to is, as special as it was to have a locally owned and family owned paper, I think what people really appreciate about the Guard, and what I really appreciate about it, is the connection that we've always had with the community. And I think that comes from not necessarily the people who own the paper, but the people who work here and live here. So I'm hoping that continues, but I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't a little apprehensive.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed. Hope everything works out. Hey, I've been a subscriber since the first week I moved here in April of 1990.
Wow. Well, hey, thank you for doing that. And I have to say, for people who care about this, if you value it, the best thing I can say is, hey, buy a subscription. I know money's tight for a lot of people. You're doing your bills at the end of the month and trying to make everything add up, but I think that's really what papers around the country are figuring out is, the way forward is, papers can go as far as the community will take them in terms of the support. And we've seen, around the country how important it is to have a local news source. Going back to what we talked about at the beginning, the Larry Nassar thing, that came to light because the Indianapolis paper, and some others did some really in-depth reporting on that situation that really brought that all out into the light, which just shows how important that is.
Yep, the Indy Star for Michigan State and a small paper out of Harrisburg broke the Penn State scandal, so important to understand. You sent me an article by Jeff Passan of Yahoo talking baseball, and 30 years ago, the owners of MLB were found guilty of collusion, and it's been a very quiet free agent offseason. There's still a lot of quality on the market. So from what you read, and that was an interesting article, be it powerhouse agent waiting for big deals, owners reluctant to part with huge profits, the economic system itself, what did you get from that piece?
Well, it's been a fascinating offseason, especially for me as a Royals fan. You know, the Royals have all these free agents, and I've been waiting to figure out, okay, who's going to sign them, and nobody has.
Right.
They're still sitting out there on the market, and a lot of players are in that position. And there have been some pretty interesting questions raised. You know, the term collusion is something that, you know, people kind of whisper. You know, it's not something that you really say out in the open or openly accuse teams of doing, but it has raised some questions. The fact that we're this close to spring training and so many of these guys are still unsigned. I think in that article, got to the bottom of this. A lot of the issue is just the economics of baseball right now don't make very much sense. It doesn't make sense to pay a guy $200 million at the end of his career, you know, the second half of his career, and then have so much dead money at the end of it. You know, the deals that are out there, you know, the Albert Pujols deals and deals like that where guys are in the decline of their career but making way more money than they did before, it just doesn't make sense. And I think teams have figured that out. And the other part of it is a lot of teams now have realized that one of the ways to build a contending team is to be really, really bad. The tanking thing has started to catch on, and teams are looking at it and saying, so I could spend $150 million to sign a free agent and go from winning 70 games to 75 games. But what's the value in that? It's actually better, you know, if you're going to be bad, be really bad and don't spend any money and get the draft picks and try to build your team through the draft. So there's not much incentive. If you don't think your team is going to contend, there's not much incentive to go out there and sign free agents.
I'll tell you what, Mariner fans are going to be striking that pose with Robinson Cano's deal in about 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, another baseball story was that after nearly 70 years, the Cleveland franchise parts ways with Chief Wahoo, who looks like some disturbing 1930s ad when you kind of check it out. I'm always curious about folks' takes on this, from why now, who's it hurting, or never a bad time to do the right thing. What's your angle on this?
Well, I think the last thing you said is probably the closest to my opinion on it. There is never a bad time to do the right thing, although I wonder about doing the right thing a year from now, as opposed to just doing it now.
Right, 2019.
That's what I would ask. If, you know, if this is the right thing to do, then just do it now. Don't hang on to it for another year. It's not like fans are so attached to this logo that they need a year to, like, mourn and say goodbye to it. I wouldn't think. I know people get really sentimental about that stuff, but it's just a logo. Logos change all the time. I honestly don't understand why anybody would oppose changing this. You know, even if it doesn't offend you personally, like, is it that big a deal to you? Like, is your whole identity wrapped up in this logo and you're going to be so upset if it changes? Or can you just say, okay, not a big deal to me. Maybe somebody cares about it. So, you know, if it offends somebody, then let's just change it to something a little more modern. I don't see the harm in that for anybody.
Spot on. Couple final thoughts. Oregon basketball, they just won back-to-back Pac-12 games, first time this year. If you were to evaluate, you know, right now I think they're 81st in the power rankings. The reality of their NCAA tournament chances, from wiggle room nearly gone to maybe they're getting it together and it'll make a move. What's your reality read here?
Yeah, we were kicking around what their record would need to be, I think they have 10 Pac-12 games left.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Kicking around how they would need to finish to even be in the conversation. I think 7-3 is the minimum. Might need to be 8-2. And that's going to be tough to do. You know, they've got the Bay Area trip this week. If they can sweep that, you know, that's a start. Stanford, even though Stanford's not looking real good in the RPI, they're still ahead of Oregon in the standings. So if you can get that one on the road, that's a place to start. And you still got the Arizona schools coming to Matthew Knight Arena, so you keep that in the back of your mind. But it's just a long, long uphill climb. They've got to get really hot. But, you know, Steve had a story in the paper today, and it's true. February's been a really good month for Oregon.
Yep.
Dana Altman's been here. That's when the Ducks typically start to play their best basketball, and they're definitely going to have to do that this year.
I agree. It starts with a sweep this weekend. And lastly, half the country is going to watch that little football game Sunday. Patriots for the 8th time during the Brady hoodie era. The Eagles seeking their first ever Super Bowl title to make their criminally insane fans happy. You've got a lean, a pick, or are you just going to maybe watch and hope a great game presents itself?
Well, you know, I think... criminally insane would probably be the term that would apply to you if you pick Nick Foles and the Eagles over Tom Brady and the Patriots. So I don't think I could possibly go there. I'm hoping for a good game. You know, I will say this in defense of the Patriots, and if you're not from Boston, you know, if you don't have some tie to New England, you probably hate the Patriots. It's pretty commonplace. I will say about them, you know, every time they take the field, the thing that they've done for the NFL the last decade plus, they have embodied excellence basically every time they take the field. So I'm confident that this is going to be a good Super Bowl because the Patriots always show up. You know, in a big game, the Patriots always show up. We don't know about the Eagles. Hopefully they do their part to at least make it entertaining. But I do expect the Patriots to show up.
All right. He's Austin Meek of the Register Guard on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Covered a lot of stuff. Much appreciate your insight, sir. You enjoy the week. You enjoy the Super Bowl. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.